Love It or Leave It is brought to you by Built. No one likes paying rent, but Built makes it feel a little better. Built is a loyalty program for renters that rewards you monthly with points and exclusive benefits in your neighborhood. With Built, every rent payment earns you points. They can be used toward flights, hotels, Lyft rides, Amazon, and so much more. And here's something to get excited about. Now Built members can earn points on mortgage payments for the first time. That means you can get rewarded wherever you live and unlock exclusive benefits from more than 45,000 restaurants, fitness studios, pharmacies, and other neighborhood partners. Personally, I'd redeem my points for a fitness class, for Amazon, for Lyft rides. There's many different things you can get. It's simple. Paying rent is better with Built, and now owning a home can be better with Built too. Earn rewards and get something back wherever you live. We don't live in a society where they're building enough houses. We don't live in a society where people can live where the jobs are or find jobs where they live. And so you got to find some way to get through this. And hey, with Built, you get a little back on your rent. It's not Built's fault what the rent is, but Built gets some points on it. You know, you can get a gift card. Isn't that nice? Rent is too high. Get a gift card. Join the loyalty program for renters at joinbuilt.com/loveit. That's joinbuilt.com/loveit. Make sure to use our URL so they know we sent you. Hey, do you want to listen to a comedy podcast that isn't all about pooping your pants and working out?
Yes.
Sure. Then check out my friend Neil Brennan's podcast, Blocks. It's based on his Netflix special where he discussed things that made him feel alienated from the world and what he could do about it. The podcast covers similar ground. Guests come with a list of their blocks, and together with Neil, they make light of them. It's surprisingly funny and earnest. Past guests have included Trevor Noah, Jerry Seinfeld, Nikki Glaser, David Letterman, Taylor Tomlinson, Bill Burr, and John Lovett, where I discuss being gay and also not fitting in with gay people. Don't really fit in with anybody. It's a sexual orientation thing. You're not going to believe it. I overshared. Blocks comes out every 2 weeks, so it doesn't feel like a burden for you or Neil. And isn't that what it's all about? Blocks. I'm going to read verbatim what comes at the end. Note from Neil, not sure how to end this promo. Love it. This is Neil. Can you add some sort of flourish here? Make it your own. And I think we have. I really love the show Blocks. Neil is a great, interviewer, and he's so funny. The show is great. Please check it out.
In moments like these, it's easy to feel overwhelmed and even easier to feel powerless. But we are neither. I'm Stacey Abrams, and on my podcast, Assembly Required, I take on each executive action, legislative battle, and breaking news moment by asking three questions. What's really happening? What can we do about it? And how do we keep going together? This is a space for clarity, strategy, and hope rooted in action, not denial. New episodes of Assembly Required drop Tuesdays. Tune in wherever you get your podcasts and on YouTube.
What's up, Los Angeles? Welcome to Love It or Leave It live at Dynasty Typewriter. A great show for you tonight. Yorma Taconi is here. Dylan Adler is here. Together we will find out which couples can kill, what trending slop actually makes us pop, and of course we'll regret it all by the end with second thoughts. But first, let's get into it. What a week. The Trump administration began deploying ICE agents to airports across the U.S., purportedly to address long security lines as the partial government shutdown left TSA unpaid and understaffed, explained an ICE spokesperson to a journalist holding a small audio recorder. Drop the gun! Here are our boys in green. In photo after photo, very helpfully standing around. Look at these guys. They can't even stand at the airport correctly. You got to go to a gate. And 10 minutes before boarding begins, you got to stand in the boarding area. Because even though that means until your group is called, everyone has to ask who is and isn't in line and then awkwardly go around each other, you will be first to board with your group, which in turn creates pressure for everyone to crowd the boarding area because you risk not having space for your bag because you respected the process. Even though if everyone respected the process and waited in their seats or just not directly in front of the gate, everyone would board in roughly the same order anyway, which is just a small example how life gets worse as you move from a high trust to a low trust society. Another example being Donald Trump as president and deploying ICE to the fucking airports.
Anyway, Trump waxed poetic in a True Social post about the deployment to airports, saying, quote, "The public is loving ICE. They are great American patriots. They just happen to have much larger and harder muscles than most, which is what they're supposed to have. I know there are direct flights to Charleston. I want the two layovers. I need them," said Lindsey Graham, saliva dripping onto the table. Meanwhile, the TSA's acting administrator said Wednesday that ICE, shuffling around in the little vests, hadn't magically fixed the problem. More than 480 TSA agents have quit since the shutdown began, and the country's airports are experiencing the highest wait times in history. If only Kamala were elected, we could be experiencing the highest wait times in herstory. Oh. And it's not all bad. Every ICE agent drinking a taxpayer-funded Starbucks at Newark Terminal B is one fewer ICE agent harassing people on the street. But it's also one more person in line at the airport Starbucks, and every airport Starbucks does seem like it's one customer away from total collapse. Think of it. It's the one place, if you told me that an ICE agent put their gun up in the air and fired to try to calm the chaos, I'd be like, let's hear him out. But all of this is symbolic. The reason TSA is not funded is because Democrats do not want to fund ICE, with the exception of John Fetterman, who's in the middle of his own version of Eat, Pray, Love, but instead of trying new pasta shapes until you realize you are enough, you have a stroke and realize you are conservative. Okay, so we're not funding TSA because we're not funding ICE, but ICE is sitting on $85 billion from Trump's big, beautiful bill. So in order to avoid funding ICE, we've created a situation in which only ICE is funded. I haven't seen ICE ruin this many people's travel plans since the Titanic. Delta Airlines announced this week that it was suspending some airport perks for members of Congress until the shutdown is over, like a designated check-in desk. Not to be outdone, Spirit Airlines said it was going to stop hosing the turds out of the aisle between flights. But the whole reason Democrats drew this line was to create pressure on Trump and Republicans to attach reforms to any funding bill to rein in ICE's worst excesses. But when Democrats proposed reforms to require ICE to wear ID and show their faces, to codify rules around the use of force, to reaffirm the need for judicial warrants and prohibit baseless detentions, to protect people at hospitals and at courthouses, among other proposals, a bunch of online warriors and some lefties mocked these Democrats as centrist squishes, proposing half measures to reform an agency that cannot be fixed. But whatever our aim is in the long term, right now, the truth is the only hope of any reform at ICE in the next several years is through a deal because it will require Republican votes in Congress, not to mention Trump's signature. Saying, LOL, Democrats bad, sidesteps the actual hard question. Funding ICE with no reforms is unacceptable. The complete overhaul we'd want is impossible. Trump is at his lowest ebb and Democrats have leverage. The question is, what can we extract right now to make giving up our leverage worth it? And like Melinda Gates said to her divorce attorneys, let's fuck him all the way back to Epstein's Island. This week, Trump demanded Republicans hold out on a deal unless it includes not only ICE funding, but his elections bill that will require married women to show their passports, birth certificates, or whole to vote in the midterms. This is the SAVE Act, which doesn't have enough votes to pass on its own, let alone when tied to government funding.
So I'm tying Homeland Security into voter identification with picture and proof of citizenship in order to vote. And I'm requesting that the Republican senators do that immediately. You don't have to take a fast vote. Don't worry about Easter going home. In fact, make this one for Jesus, okay?
And then if Jesus does come back, we'll finally have enough funny to deport that barefoot Arab socialist back to the desert he came from. On Tuesday, Senate Democrats rejected a framework from Republicans to end the shutdown because it didn't go far enough. And as of this recording, the negotiations are ongoing as more and more TSA agents call in sick or quit altogether. And I'll say to them the same thing I said to the Crooked Media Workers Union during our bargaining sessions. Come on, please work for free. Please, just work for free. Didn't work. On Thursday, the Senate held a test vote on what Republicans called their best and final offer. In the end, to no one's surprise, only John Fetterman crossed the aisle. Republicans can count on his vote until that next stroke turns him Maoist and he disappears into the Poconos for 20 years. I'm scared, but buckle up for when he comes back. You will not believe what happens when Fetterman Maoist comes out of the the wilderness in 20 years. They are ready. All of this is why ICE at the airports is a fitting metaphor for the Trump era, a symbolic deployment during a symbolic shutdown, as the president's chaos and mismanagement draws all of our attention and energy as the country crumbles around us. The Pentagon has a $1 trillion budget, but Trump says they need another $200 billion for the war in Iran we already supposedly won.
You know, I don't like to say this. We've won this. This war has been won. The only one that likes to keep it going is the fake news.
Meanwhile, on the tarmac at LaGuardia on Sunday night, as people were in terminals waiting in security lines for hours to be screened by unpaid TSA agents, two pilots died in a collision, one of a series of mishaps under an FAA that has been underfunded, overworked, and saddled with obsolete technology. And we can't just sit back and let people die because we underfunded critical life-saving infrastructure while expecting overwhelmed professionals to make up for our neglect. It's an airport, not a hospital. Trump's own Secretary of Transportation, Sean Duffy, who I would make fun of for being a reality star, except he happens to be one of the most responsible members of Trump's cabinet, is going around to Congress, hat in hand, begging for money to fix the air traffic control system for a tiny fraction of what Trump wants to spend turning Ayatollahs from a liquid into a gas.
Memory lane. Memory lane.
And you know what that sound means? It's time for a trip down memory lane. Back in the 2010s, conservatives spent years yelling on TV and holding hearings and conducting investigations about a company called Solyndra. This was a supposedly epic boondoggle because the Obama administration backed loans of $535 million, half a billion dollars, as part of a guarantee to this solar company, Solyndra, and that company went under, and the government lost that $535 million. Now, that loan was only 3% of that overall loan program. Democrats assumed that some fraction of the companies that received loans would fail. That's why the government had to be a backstop in the first place. These were some risky bets. It's like how we make this show. A certain amount of failure is just baked into the process. But even with the losses from Solyndra, that loan program, under the Obama administration, funded clean energy and created jobs while also returning every dime of taxpayer money plus interest. Taxpayers made a profit on that loan program. Republicans turned a real-world success into a symbolic scandal for television. And yet, this week, the Trump administration announced it was writing a check for $1 billion to a French energy company as a payoff for killing two offshore wind farms. In exchange, the company, the company TotalEnergies has promised to subsidize oil and gas production in Texas while promising not to pursue offshore wind energy in America ever again. In other words, the Trump administration is paying the French $1 billion to not work. Their favorite thing. And Republicans who claim to be outraged by waste and by the government choosing winners and losers won't say a peep. Because for these people, the real world impact does not matter. The long-term cost to the country doesn't matter. What matters is the symbolism. What matters is owning the libs and what plays on television. That's what we're seeing with Iran too. On Wednesday, NBC News reported that Trump receives a daily video montage from military officials highlighting the biggest strikes in Iran from the past 48 hours. A briefing that one official described as a series of clips of stuff blowing up. Move over, Bay of Pigs. This is the Michael Bay of Pigs. Responded J.D. Vance, look, obviously we're concerned about the screen time, but you know, one day you're going to have a president of your own and you're going to see just how hard it is to get a moment of peace. And this isn't the only briefing Trump gets about the war, but it's raising concerns even among his allies that he might not be receiving the full picture of how things are going, especially when you consider the company he keeps. On Monday, Trump had this to say about the decision to start a war with Iran and the influence of his defense secretary.
Pete, I think you were the first one to speak up. And you said, let's do it.
Please, Mr. President, save it for The Hague. It's fun to think about, to have that fantasy, as if we live in that world. On Wednesday evening, Trump spoke at an annual Republican gala and said this about Iran.
And they are negotiating, by the way, and they want to make a deal so badly, but they're afraid to say it because they figure they'll be killed by their own people. They're also afraid they'll be killed by us.
Not sure where that paranoia is coming from when you have the reassurances of the defense secretary.
And that's why we see ourselves as part of this negotiation as well. We negotiate with bombs.
Oh, but that's not what that word means. You don't get a better deal on a CR-V by throwing a brick through a window of the dealership. Even if you're trying to take out their lead salesman, you're just radicalizing the junior associates, especially because you did this during Happy Honda Days. Take out the lead negotiator. There's somebody on the lower ebb that we could work with. Not anymore. They're fucking furious. You took out the window and the lead negotiator. In the middle of this precious time called Happy Honda Days. There was a story in Zateo today that Hegseth's nickname around the Pentagon is Dumb McNamara. This really bothered me because it's not a play on Robert McNamara at all. And so we have some alternatives. Thick Cheney. Yeah. Blondaliza Rice. Donald Dumsfeld. And Ugg Fife. There's a question as to whether people remembered Ugg Fife. Said Trump at Thursday's cabinet meeting.
And just so we set the record straight, because I've been watching the Wall Street Journal's fake news and all these stories that get printed like, oh, I want to make a deal. They are begging to make a deal, not me. They're begging to make a deal.
Sure, buddy. Trump teased that Iran had even given him a gift and confirmed at the cabinet meeting that the gift was allowing 8 oil tankers through the Strait of Hormuz. Also, the oil tankers were made of wood and shaped like horses. It's a wonderful, thoughtful gift. So Trump says we're winning the war and Iran is begging for a deal, but Iran rejected a ceasefire and Trump is sending thousands of paratroopers to the region while Iran is reportedly building up its defenses around a place called Karg Island, which handles 90% of the country's crude exports in preparation for a possible U.S. ground operation. Karg Island doesn't sound like a place we should be sending American troops. It sounds like where we should have to travel to get a gold star in Mario Party or to rescue your wife from King Kong. But Trump and the Republicans have a problem. Markets don't care about how the war looks on television. Markets care about the price of oil. And voters don't care when the Secretary of Defense says we're bombing the woke out of Wokistan when gas is pushing $5 a gallon. That's why Trump's approval, according to a new Reuters poll, hit a new low of 36%. Trump's own district in Palm Beach just elected a Democrat. 2 years ago, a Republican won that seat by 20 points. Meanwhile, the president is touring Graceland while the country is at war.
Elvis had 2 8th-degree black belts in karate. One was in Kenpo, and that's what this
was. Was he really good, or was it just...
Actually, he was really good. Okay. He started practicing.
Could I have taken him in a fight?
I don't know. You might.
I think he would have been respectful enough to let you in.
Yes, he probably would. But
would Elvis have let Trump win? A lot of people forget this. But Elvis had a lesbian sister who he loved and whose partner he embraced. And a lot of people forget this because I made it up. Elvis never said that much about politics after he got that little badge from Nixon. The colonel wanted to protect Elvis's all-American image. And you can get pretty far in America on how things seem. But right now, the American people are furious about how things actually are. And Trump can hit the stage and swing his hips and blow his kisses and serenade the five. But at the end of the day, he's just a fat slob past his prime, shooting at the TV and slowly dying on the fucking toilet. Yeah. Which, by the way, is my favorite Elvis album. That slob on the, dying on the fucking toilet, mama. Mama. That slob, dying on the toilet, mama. Did I do better in rehearsal? Mama, mama, mama. That's it, mama. Mama. Show's over. Mama. It's this for an hour. Mama. Mama. It's similar. You got to do the, you go the back of your throat. It's the French. Then you go lower. We got a great show for you tonight. Yorma Taconi is here. Mama. 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 And we'll be right back.
Hey, don't go anywhere. There's more of Love It or Leave It coming up.
This show is brought to you by AG1. Spring is the season of change, but it doesn't have to throw off your foundation. As the days get longer and your schedule shifts, your health routine shouldn't get more complicated. AG1 helps you shake off the winter slump and embrace the new season
Powered by antioxidants, probiotics, and functional mushrooms, AG1 delivers daily immune support that helps you stay your best. Easy-to-use travel packs mean your routine goes wherever your spring adventures take you. Use that extra daylight to kickstart your morning with a boost of B vitamins and superfoods for sustained all-day energy. Formulated with 75-plus high-quality ingredients, including 5 clinical-studied probiotic strains, it replaces your multivitamin digestive support supplements in one single scoop. AG1 fills the nutrient gaps and keeps you moving with steady energy and total body support. AG1 is great. It's very easy. You can make it part of your morning routine. And then you know that whatever you do that day, whether you have a nice healthy salad or you stop by a Raisin Cane's, that you did okay. You had your AG1. You know, you had some vitamins and probiotics.
I had some this morning.
Did you?
Great. I did. Yeah.
Nice. And look, and you can see it in the brightness of your skin.
Thank you.
And attitude.
I appreciate that.
Visit drinkag1.com/love it to get 3 AG1 travel packs and a bottle of vitamin D3 plus K2 for free in your welcome kit. With your first AG1 subscription, a $72 value. That's drinkag1.com/love it. Love It or Leave It is brought to you by Incogni. We live in a world where our personal information is somehow both private and everywhere. Thousands of data brokers are collecting and trading your details, your home address, your phone number, your email, even your browsing habits, and you probably have no idea who has what. And it's not just annoying. That's how you end up with endless spam calls, mystery marketing texts, and yes, those extremely convincing scam calls. Here's the thing. You do have the legal right to ask data brokers to delete your information, but doing that yourself would take endless hours. That's where Incogni comes in. Once you create an account and give them permission, Incogni automatically reaches out to data brokers on your behalf and demands the removal of your data. For example, like, hey, have you ever read the book Langoliers by Stephen King? People are on an airplane, it goes through the Aurora Borealis, they end up just a few minutes behind, and everything is gone, and the world gets eaten by the Langoliers. Incogni's like good Langoliers. They come up behind you and eat up your data, so that you leave you be private on the internet. And Incogni added a custom data removal feature with their unlimited plan, so you can find a random website exposing your info. You just send the link to Incogni, and one of their real privacy agents handles it. No endless forms, no bots, just actual human beings getting your data taken down, like at the end of Godfather. Protect yourself and your family. Take your information off the market. Go to incogni.com/love it and use code love it for 60% off any annual plan. That's incogni.com/love it. Code love it for 60% off, and they offer a 30-day money-back guarantee. They can't misuse your data if they can't find it. Live free from dangerous spam by using Incogni. And we're back. Before we get to the rest of the show, how many people here are from Los Angeles?
Yeah.
Have you been following what happened today with the K-line? Do you anyone know what I'm talking about with the K-line? It's a good story, which is LA is gonna build some rail. And boy, like an ant crawling across a rubber band, it's going to keep getting longer in front of us, but also behind us somehow. And the question was, are we going to build a train that basically connects the sort of north of LAX all the way up to the Hollywood Bowl? And this is something LA voted for in a ballot measure, 70%, had to get to 67%. We voted for it 70% to do a bunch of transit extensions. This was in 2016. There's also a bunch of money set aside if we can accelerate this project. There's like $2.2 billion set aside to do it. But there is this problem. In order to build a train, you have to dig a tunnel because it's Los Angeles. And the tunnel ends up going about 100 feet underneath some homes in Lafayette Square. So the community in Lafayette Square said, we don't want a giant train under our 100 feet under our house because it's going to shake the cats. And so it's going to make the cats scared and we'll be scared and it'll be shaking all the time like they imagined from the movies. So they did a study, two studies. Millions of dollars was spent delaying the project on studies. And the studies came back and they said, actually, these train holes will be so far underground. I don't know what the technically are called. sort of these train paths, tunnels, these tunnels, technical term tunnels, will be so far underground that it'll be actually imperceptible without fine instruments. And you're not a fine instrument, you're a homeowner in mid-city, so you're fine. The cats won't know, you won't know, let's build this thing. And they said, no, we're still worried about the tunnels. Can you move the route? And they're like, well, if we move the route, the train's going to have to turn right and then turn left. And trains hate doing that. So it's going to slow the train down. They said, please move the tunnel for no reason. And everybody said, fine, homeowners in Lafayette Square, we're going to move the tunnel. So now if you look at the map of what happens with the K-line, it goes like this, then it comes around and it stays under San Vicente so it doesn't go out under as many homes. And they said, thank you so much. This train may never be built. And so they tried to stop it. But they got some pretty big hitters involved, including
Mayor Karen Bass, who seemed to be receptive to some of their arguments. And so there was a question going into what was a pivotal vote today that nobody really knew about, that basically meant that if the measure passed, but there was another motion to delay it, the K-line could never be started to be even considered being constructed until 2041. 2041, if it was delayed any further. It still may not be built until 2041, but there's a chance now we can unlock some of these billions of dollars and get the thing built faster. But a lot of people spoke up. It seemed to really piss off Mayor Karen Bass, who put out a statement saying, anyone who suggests I'm going to stand in the way of this train is spreading misinformation, but I will make sure this community is heard. And it's like, well, wait, what? If they're hurt, we can hear them, but can we then ignore them? That was the question. But the good news is today there was a vote and a lot of people spoke up. A lot of people came to the meeting. There's a lot of behind the scenes negotiations. And at the end of the day, the Metro Board voted to expand the K-line without any delay. So it was a real victory for local politics and people standing up for transit. And yeah, it's still going to take too long, but that's a good example of how LA is finally facing some of the ways it has been governed stupidly for a very, very long time. Now, that doesn't mean we're not doing stupid things elsewhere, like how they're trying to implement SB 79. But this was a good example of people speaking up, putting on pressure, and it got the local government to move faster to build the K line, which they're calling the Pink Line to the Pink Pony Club because it goes through WeHo. That's all I wanted to say about that. Love It or Leave It is coming back to our nation's capital. Join us on April 23rd at the Lincoln Theater to pregame the White House Correspondents' Dinner weekend and then not go to it. We have some awesome guests, which I'm announcing right now for the first time. CNN's Jake Tapper, Senator Chris Murphy, and MS Now Simone Sanders Townsend and Eugene Daniels. That's a great lineup. Could be more. There could be more great guests coming down the pike. You don't know yet. There's some tickets left, not that many. Go to crooked.com/events to get them before they sell out. All right. Please welcome to the stage the director of a hilarious new horror movie. It's, you know, you'll laugh. You'll, you know, be scared. You can do two things. Called Over Your Dead Body. It's Yorma Taconi.
Hi.
Hi. Thanks for being here. Right. Come on in.
Love you too. If you said I love you, then I love you too. I don't know. I don't know if that's what you said. Righteous Kill. That's my podcast.
Oh, okay, great.
Quaid Army.
It's Quaid
such an
Army?
Unbelievably difficult thing to explain.
What's Quaid Army?
Why we decided Army? To call our fans Quaids.
Is it after Randy or Dennis?
Neither.
Wow.
Neither.
Is it from Total Recall?
Yes.
It is?
Yeah.
Oh, then I'm fluent.
Yeah, great. Yes.
Oh, say no more.
Yeah, say no more. Yes, it is because of a sketch that we did on SNL, which was Andy playing a Quado in someone's... have you seen it?
I've seen the sketch and I'm aware of Quado.
Okay, great. Yeah. And then while we were writing the sketch, I thought it was really funny that Quado should call anyone who's not a Quado a Quaid. When we wrote the sketch, I was like, we should start calling each other Quaids. And I was really obsessed with it. And then I mentioned it on the pod, and then it somehow became that our listeners are Quaids. That's anyway, great. That's the story.
Quaid Hive, rise up.
Quaid Army.
I love that.
Thank you. By the way, I really want to sit like you. Like
I know.
When I saw the show, I was like, oh, fuck, we get to sit like this?
You can sit wherever you want.
Oh, that's great.
These chairs are...
like a little monkey.
Yeah, I like to be up. I don't...
yeah,
I don't
that's good.
Sit normally.
Okay, good.
Hey, you were part of Lonely Island.
Yeah,
part of
technically.
A group. Woo! I'm part of a group. The Pate America.
Yeah, I know. I was telling you, like, it's just crazy to see your face. I was telling Peter Miller, who is my brother-in-law, who writes for this show, but I was telling him that it was nice to see how handsome you were.
Wow.
I said that.
I you know, it's he told me that you said that, and I appreciate that.
We didn't talk about this backstage.
I really am, I consider myself the funny one. I'm curious what you learned about being part of a group, and if you have any tips for getting the other members of the group to hang out with you outside of work.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. This, I got kids, and we all have kids, so it's hard to, even for our pod, it's hard to even find the time to actually, like, see each other. Like, we were trying to calculate when the last time we all saw each other together with Seth Meyers. The podcast is with Seth Meyers as well. And it's before the pandemic. They all hung out together, which is really sad. Yeah. So I don't have any advice for that at all. But being a part of the group, like, what
have you learned? Like,
navigating being part of a creative
group.
Well,
you're so, but it's weirder, right? Because it's three people, right? Mm-hmm. So like ours is more like democratically, it's like majority rule. So oftentimes if we have an idea and only two of the three of us understand the idea, that person will usually leave until the idea is a little bit more fully formed. And then the third guy will come in and poke holes and be like, this is why I don't understand this, like logic, da, da, da. And then you make it better by like the consensus of like once it gets to the point where all three members understand it, then it's usually the best product. And then I would say like there's a lot of fucking piggybacking. So you almost don't know where you know how writer's rooms are. It's like a joke starts and then it becomes another joke and then becomes like to the point where you almost don't know where it began and it's a much weirder joke, which I always appreciate.
Yeah, I feel like that people will ask about certain jokes from the like correspondence era or other, and I have no idea where jokes started and ended. How could you possibly keep track of that? I mean, I know the good ones are mine, but yeah. I don't really remember beyond totally. That. So your new movie, Over Your Dead Body.
Yes.
It's a remake of a 2021 Norwegian black comedy called The Trip.
Yes, which is such a weird thing to even have wanted to make a remake was a very odd thing for me.
How did you think about it?
So it got proposed to me from a producer named Guy Danella, who worked with Tommy Wirkola. I'm going to go ahead and say that's how you say it in Norwegian. Tommy made the movie Violent Night. Which is the Santa Claus Die Hard movie, basically. And he's made a whole bunch of other movies. And there was like a Venn diagram there of like, he's doing action comedy and I'm doing comedy action. And there was some crossover there. And Tommy had been quoting some of our movies on like Hot Rod he loved, and he loved Popstar and MacGruber and things like that. So he was just quoting us like on set, and Guy was like, I haven't met that guy. Da, da, da. Like, I'll hit him up. So he hit me up, and then a week later, he was like, hey, this is weird, but you know, Tommy made this movie called The Trip. It's originally called In Bad Days was the original like Norwegian title. But it's like on Netflix. So I watched it, and it's fucking crazy to like make any remake of it, to even want to do that. But it's also weird for how recent it is. Like, it was only a couple of years ago that it came out. The original is great in a very European way. It's like super fucking dark. Like, it is like, it's about two people who go to a cabin and want to kill each other, basically. And then crazy shit ensues and it gets like weirder and weirder. And like, it's a really fun, I don't want to spoil anything, but like it goes all these different places. I loved the original. I thought it was great. And then I love the script that Nick and Brian wrote. They're in a group called Britannic, or I think I'm pronouncing that right. But like, it was a really funny script, and it felt much more like me in that it just tonally, I felt like I could do something. And then casting wise, like with Jason Segel and Samara, it was just so fun to make. And I it was a real challenge for me, because it's like, there's drama in it. There's actual real acting scenes. There's full on action, like not funny action necessarily. It's pretty fucking gory. But it was all these different tones, and then weaving throughout it is like we were pushing the comedy as much as we could, but within it being a real situation. So it was just like the challenge of doing it. That was a really fucking long answer.
No, it was good. I'm interested. I'm interested. It was interesting. I'm fully in. It could have been longer.
Thank you, John.
So I'm glad you brought up the difference between the sort of the comedy aspect and the horror aspect, because what we were talking about sort of some of the like iconic sketches and songs and what I wanted to talk to you about was actually editing, because how much of, I think, what made them really special, among other reasons, was in part they were just like, the comedy editing was like really so excellent, and that comedy editing and editing generally just gets short shrift as how much is made through editing. And I'm wondering how you think about the difference between like editing something for comedy and then editing something for suspense.
There was one moment, this is a tangent, but there was one moment, we got a bad review of the movie Hot Rod, and one of the criticisms was that it was poorly edited. And I was like, the amount of fucking time that we spend, like literally sitting there being like one frame, two frames, like, because it is down to the frame to me with comedy in particular. And so, you know, I've spent fucking thousands of hours. Every single one of the digital shorts that you saw, like that we made, and we made over 100, is like, this was before they had editors even working at the show. So me and Akiva like edited everything. So I was there like in at SNL when no one's even in the building when like when we're editing these things. So we put so much time and energy. And as you said, it's timing. Editing is timing and comedy is timing. So those scenes, what was really fun for me was that the scenes that are purely comedy or have like a comedy moment in it, those are the scenes that I sit in there and the term is frame fucking. And like, and I sit there and get it and get it and get it. And sometimes that's music. Sometimes that's like the edit. Sometimes it's both. Oftentimes it's both. And then the action, same thing. Like I like it, you know, just it's removing frames. Sometimes it's even like, you know, like there's a punch and you are taking out the frames in between here and here. And then it just seems super aggressive. So you spend the time on all these things, the action, the comedy, and then some of those things are like either the suspense, as you're saying, or the moments where suspense becomes like a punch or like a piece of action. And I would sit there and really fucking focus on those scenes the way I would with any comedy scene. But what was really fun for me was the scenes that don't involve that and are just purely like Jason and Samara really acting and being with each other and leaving the camera on them, because it's so fun to see a performer, the little shifts in the eye or when they have, because there's a lot going on in this movie and there's a lot going on if you see it twice, because like you sort of see things in a different vantage point. And so it was really fun for me to see how easy those scenes were to edit and not fucking with them, because I'm so used to like overly like da 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 da. But like, those scenes that like the ones that have impact, like the gore scenes, they edit more like jokes because you're always wanting to be ahead of the audience. I'm like, that was a big thing for us as and what I was always saying with Lonely Island stuff is that the stupider the joke, the faster you tell it, because you just want to be ahead of your audience. And so a lot of the violence and stuff that happens in this is like, it's punchy in that way of like, and sometimes it takes a full fucking day to be like, now it's good. Like, you know, yeah. You know, really sit there. Anyway, another long answer. No, I apologize.
Hey, did you see the new Justin Timberlake DUI footage?
I haven't seen it yet. On the way here, my Uber driver was talking a lot about it.
He's very likable even while getting arrested, which is, I think, what that's it. You know, he has it.
He definitely does. I've been saying the story about Justin to me is that I've never met anyone more confident in my life. Like, absolutely. Like, and when we made Dick in a Box, he was like, that's a fucking hit. I was like, a hit? Like, wait, what? Like, the beat sucks. This is like, you know, two perverts.
Man. There's a...
That's a hit.
That's so cool. Do you want to see a clip of him getting arrested? Let's watch it.
I don't know.
What are you visiting?
Yeah, I'm on tour.
What are you doing?
I'm on the world tour. I'm Justin Timberlake.
What's your name?
Justin Timberlake.
You are Justin Timberlake?
Yeah. White? I'm just kidding.
He says, you call me white? I'm just kidding. And then the artist is like, well, what kind of tour? And he goes, it's hard to explain. I'm Justin Timberlake. Which I found charming.
Well, it's also weird when your name is a brag.
Yeah.
Like his actual name is him bragging.
So strange. Funny.
Hasn't happened to me yet.
Yeah. You played Pee Wee Herman in the Weird Al movie.
It did. Yeah.
How far did you go to get into character?
I begged. Yeah. I bet not far. I dressed up as Pee Wee Herman twice for Halloween. Like once when I was like 14. And then I was lucky enough to become friends with Paul later in life. And he was just the sweetest man alive. I don't know if you've seen that documentary, but it's amazing. He was such a great person. I mean, like I didn't realize my wife made this movie called Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, which is about Mr. Rogers. And I didn't realize he was like the weird Mr. Rogers. He was like so sweet, so much connection in the audience. And and I was so fucking nervous because they were very secretive about that movie and you couldn't say anything about like you being in it or anything like that. And I was so worried that Paul was going to fucking hate it. But he was cool with that.
That's cool.
Can I tell you my favorite moment of my life, like in Hollywood? You have
We're
all
out
these
of time. Oh, yes, tell it, tell it, tell it, please.
I I had a moment. This is my brag. This is my Justin Timberlake. But I was at Paul Rubin's house with Paul Rust. They were writing the Pee Wee's Big Holiday movie. And I, at the time, I was going to maybe direct it. And then instead we had to do this movie, Popstar. Fucking bummer. But I was smoking weed with Paul Rubens at his kitchen table. And then I got a text from Weird Al Yankovic saying, congrats on the Grammy nomination. And I was like, oh my God. I was like, I just needed Tony Hawk to like kick in the door and be like, I'm your best friend. And I would have been like, oh shit, my 12-year-old self just like exploded.
But it's never enough, is it?
Never enough. The pit is so large.
It's like, now I'm here, but what's past here? You know, what's higher than this?
Yeah,
there must
yeah,
be something because this is already faded. Now that moment is gone. Now I'm just here. The thrill of it is done. And I'll just go home. So I guess start all over again, right?
You guys are laughing, but this is just true.
Speaking of the yawning chasm between, sure, you know, meaning and death.
Yeah.
Your new movie, Over Your Dead Body,
yes,
you've got a couple played by Samara Weaving and Jason Segel who go on vacation only to discover that this may be a murderous trip of some kind.
Yes.
Sort of romantic, if you ask me. In honor of your new film, we bring you a segment we're calling Over Whose Dead Body?
Oh.
And...
Oh, Lord, that's dark.
We're going to have you blind rank the following couples based on how likely they are to murder each other on vacation. Wait, how do we blind? Forget the blind ranking part. We're going to just look at these couples.
I think that's better.
Would this couple murder each other on vacation? And if so, who would win?
Okay.
First up, Vince and Linda McMahon. Vince McMahon, co-founder of the WWE. Linda McMahon, it was a longtime WWE exec, is the current U.S. Secretary of Education. They have been married since 1966. But separated in 2024. On Tuesday, Linda tweeted a wild post that said, in 2005, everything changed. The PlayStation Portable was released, and it did more than make gaming portable. It made entertainment personal, mobile, and always within reach. It was the beginning of life on the go. That's what the Secretary of Education posted this week. It's an insane feat of SponCon. Also, simply false. The PlayStation Portable changed nothing, didn't evolve anything. We'd had Game Boys forever. Crazy. Crazy. Now, last summer, Vince was cited for reckless driving after crashing his Bentley into another car on a highway in Connecticut. When asked what he was doing, Vince said this.
Why were you driving over 100 miles an hour?
It's my granddaughter's birthday.
He had to get to his granddaughter's birthday. Just being a pop-pop.
That's sweet.
Just being a good grandpa.
What a good guy. What a good guy.
Would you, A, do you think they would try to kill each other on vacation? And
okay,
B, who do you think would emerge triumphant?
Well, I'm basing this off this photo, which does look like he's almost wearing like a neck brace in this photo, right?
Yeah, I think that is a neck
brace. But it looks cool.
It does look cool.
Yeah, it does look really cool.
It's a cool look.
Looks like he broke his neck in this photo. I have a friend who works for the New York Times named Fred, and he has a phrase. This is just a slight tangent, but his phrase is like, he loves saying top turnbuckle. You know how in any like WWE fight, like they build to that, right? It's like, da, 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 da. And then when you get up on the fucking top turnbuckle, like it's the like last, like, you know,
boom.
Yeah. And he likes to say, like, if somebody comes in hot, they're coming top turnbuckle. I feel like Vince in this picture is top turnbuckle.
Okay.
So I feel like he would have an advantage. If she was going to kill him, I would certainly hope that she would choke him out with those pearls.
Good answer. I think that's right. Next up, we have Justin Trudeau and Katy Perry.
Okay.
Do you think they would try to murder each other on vacation? And if so, who'd win?
Oh, I think that any Canadian is sadly too polite to murder anyone. I mean, a Canadian versus American? No way. She's definitely killing that dude.
Yeah. She's got that also like kind of pop star energy where it's like she's done a kind of Pilates that hasn't actually been shown to the public. You know what I mean? Like it's a private government Pentagon. There's like a DARPA level of Pilates that's only available to seven women. It's like Katy Perry, like maybe Rihanna has access to it.
like yeah. very few, and to only them. And like the they're like, we the research is conclusive. Like this is the final.
And they
form.
Did it in like a hot room too. Yeah. So like, so on vacation, if they were on a beach, she could still do it.
Do you remember Onatopp in GoldenEye? How she could kill people by squeezing them to death with her.
That was
super
such a good
thighs.
Game. That was
and
such
yeah,
a good, and PlayStation changed the game.
Changed everything. Yeah, like they changed really everything.
Changed everything. Yeah, Katy Perry.
Great, I agree. That's correct. Let's do one more. Paul Thomas Anderson and Maya Rudolph.
Oh no, God, I would.
Well, you could just say they won't do it.
These are like friends of mine. I don't want to like talk about.
Well, you don't have to. It's not real. It's not real.
But I have to answer.
Yeah, that's the rules of the podcast.
God. Yeah.
And you were saying backstage he's overrated as a director. And it's like,
I definitely.
And it's like, we get it.
I don't know if I can answer this one.
You said Magnolia.
Yeah. They're such a wonderful couple. Is that? That's a really boring answer. They're so fun.
They're so fun. They're so fun. Who would kill? And who would
Paul
be killed?
Paul would kill.
And you, yeah, good.
Look at these. Like she's a little scamp in that photo too. They're both scamps. Look at them, two scamps.
Oh, one final one.
Okay,
this is me and my fiance. Okay, so you haven't met Ari, but you've met me. And who do you think would win?
Yeah. How long have you guys been together?
A couple years.
Okay.
I think that I'm dead.
And you love him?
Love to so much. I would be so shocked to be murdered on vacation. And honestly, I think at that point, it'd be like, I didn't understand the world. Let it happen. I was wrong. That's what I would say.
Can I?
I swear to God, if Ari tried to kill me on vacation, I'd just be like, that, okay. I was wrong about it. There's no reason. I got it. If I got it this wrong all the way to 43, like that, I'm out. That's okay. I deserve this. Get
also, he looks sweet, so I would imagine
that's the whole thing. It'd be a shock.
Yeah. Would Ari poison you? Like, what do you think? Like, if he was really going to do it?
I think there. What would? I don't know.
He wouldn't stab you or anything.
I think on a busy week, if you just jumped out of a corner and scared me, I'd have a heart attack. Just take me out when I'm stressed. After a tough drive home, like really trafficy and I'm late for something, just go boo, I'm out.
Yeah.
And then, you know, victimless crime, basically. Or no. That's not what I mean. What do I mean? They'll get away with it. By the way, I'll tell you something. Yeah. If Ari murders me, I hope they get away with it. Yeah. I'm in. Again, like I had
this
a
pretty cute. You guys are pretty cute couple too. Right?
Yeah, we're cute. We're cute. Yeah.
Got some cool tats too.
Yeah, they have tattoos. They're cooler than me.
Right on.
I'm like, tattoos. What about the cemetery? that's what I think.
Yeah,
that's what I think about it.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, until you get to the cemetery, boy, you better go see Over Your Dead Body, April 24th. We'll
seamless
be
seamless tie-in
with Dylan Adler.
Please go see it.
Hey, don't go anywhere. There's more of Love It or Leave It coming up.
Love It or Leave It is brought to you by Smalls. Your cat has zero interest in politics, but they absolutely have strong opinions about their food, which is why you should feed them Smalls. Smalls fresh cat food is protein-packed recipes made with preservative-free 100% human-grade ingredients you'd find in your fridge, and it's delivered right to your door for a limited time. Get 60% off your first order plus free shipping when you head to smalls.com/loveit. Starting with Smalls is easy. Just share info about your cat's diet, health, and food preferences. Then Smalls puts together a personalized meal plan for your cat. No more picking between random brands at the store. Smalls has the right food to satisfy any cat's cravings. After switching to Smalls, 88% of cat owners reported overall health improvements. That's a big deal. Still not a believer in Smalls? Forbes ranked Smalls the best overall cat food, while BuzzFeed said, "My cats went completely ballistic for this stuff." And the team at Smalls is so confident your cat will love their product that you can try it risk-free. That means they will refund you if your cat won't eat their food. So stop guessing which meals will upset their stomach. For a limited time, because you are a Love It or Leave It listener, get 60% off your first order plus free shipping when you head to smalls.com/loveit. One last time, that's 60% off your first order plus free shipping when you head to smalls.com/loveit. Love It or Leave It is brought to you by Helix. How are you preparing for springtime and spring cleaning season? Are you upgrading your home with a Helix mattress? You should.
Damn right.
Helix is the most awarded mattress brand, tested and reviewed by experts like Forbes and Wired. Helix makes buying a mattress easy.
Take the Helix Sleep Quiz and it will match you with the perfect mattress based on your personal preferences and sleep needs. Get free shipping and seamless delivery. Helix delivers your mattress right to your door with free shipping in the U.S. The Happy with Helix Guarantee offers a risk-free customer-first experience designed to ensure you're completely satisfied with your new mattress so you can rest easy with seamless returns and exchanges. Helix offers a 120-night sleep trial and limited lifetime warranty. I love my Helix mattress. Super comfortable. They're great. Sleep on it every night. And look at me. Rested. Snug as a bug in a rug. It's better than my old mattress. HelixSleep.com/loveit for 27% off site-wide. That's HelixSleep.com/loveit for 27% off site-wide. This offer is exclusive to our listeners. Make sure you enter our show name after checkout so they know we sent you. HelixSleep.com/loveit.
And we're back.
All right. Hi, guys.
My next guest loves to move fast and break things. It's the hilarious Dylan Adler.
Dylan, get out. Hi.
Hi.
Hi. We just met backstage, but this guy is great.
Yes. Oh, moving fast and breaking things. That's right.
You're on tour with Otsko.
Yes. I opened for her. I've been opening for her for about 5 years now, and I was just with her in Boise, Idaho.
Beautiful.
I know, I'm lucky.
And you were in Europe.
Yes, I've never been outside of the country until last year, where I got to open for her in Europe. It was fucking incredible.
And the women, they thought you were someone they could hit on.
Yes, okay, so the standards of masculinity in Europe are different. So in some countries, I pass, which is crazy. Like, I was a...
What country?
Honey.
Republic of Fagistan? Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. France. Exactly. The Republic of France. I've never had it happen before, but it was like a flight attendant on Air France. I don't know. And she was like, oh, do you want a complimentary meal? And then I was like, well, yes, I would. Thank you so much. I would like a compliment. You know, some people are gay for pay. I'm straight for a cheese tray.
Did you actually change
it? It's such a weird way to hit on someone.
I know. I know. I don't mind. Yeah. Yeah.
Did you notice anything about the European sense of humor? Did it? How did you do? Because when we did some shows in the UK and in Oslo and Stockholm, and we were shocked by how much people were following American politics. But I didn't have to do stand up.
Yeah. What actually did shock me was how cued in a lot of European countries are with American culture, American politics. But there were certain countries that were truly so quiet and stoic. Like Belgium was me and Otsuko's probably worst show. I literally did a backflip to abject silence. And they were like, oh, that's dangerous. And then like I had to go back to the mic because it's like a big distance from the mic. And that was mortifying. We were in Helsinki, or just like overall in different European countries. Like when you go on stage in America, they'll be like, "Whoa!" They're cheering when music's going on. But in Europe, they're like kind of clapping in unison, in like a sort of communist kind of "We are equal." All, you know, it was, I don't know, it was interesting. Yeah.
You shot the movie in Finland.
Yes, and I had a very similar experience. My first AD was named Antti, and my impression of him was, I am Antti. I am doing a joke. Now I am being serious. Now I am doing a joke. It was like, yeah, very stoic. Which, like, for me, like, I've never felt more American in my life.
Yeah.
I'm, like, so loud and, like, smiling.
Yeah. I love us.
Yeah, I know. We're great.
It's like,
yeah. Love it or leave it.
Be more like us. I think they should just try to be more like us.
Yeah. Someone in Iceland said, Americans don't have thoughts because they say every thought they think. It's like, wow, that's true.
It's such a bummer how true that is.
I remember I was somewhere, we were in somewhere in Stockholm, and someone said, ah, American, ah, Donald Trump, fake news. Like, but, trying to relate to us. Oh, yeah, America. You know, Donald Trump, fake news.
By the way, I one of my first weekends there was, it was in Helsinki, and I went to there's saunas everywhere. There's 3 million saunas. And I was in the sauna with two guys, these two giant dudes who were like ROTC or something like that. They were there for like an ROTC-ish weekend, and they were so Trumpy. And I had this, like, all of us are naked. And I was between these two giant dudes, and I just went off. I was like, I was just like, this motherfucker. I was like, it was all about, like, manhood. And, like, I was like, he's not a fucking real man. He doesn't support his wife. He's like a real man support. But I was, like, going crazy to the point where, like, they were like, okay, well, we're going to leave. Like,
had politics come up?
Yes, they were like, we like, they were Trumpy. They liked Donald Trump, and they were trying to get me to agree with them, and it went south. It was like a half an hour of me naked being like, and then another fucking thing.
And you were saying you slept with those guys.
Yes, I was like, this sounds like a porn I've seen, actually. The beginning of it, at least, you know?
Got turnt.
Yeah.
Speaking of turnt, we're all pretty turned off by what's happening with AI. And okay, so in December, Disney signed a $1 billion deal with OpenAI's video app Sora, granting them permission to use Disney IP and characters in their generative AI videos. But on Monday, OpenAI abruptly shuttered Sora, dissolving their deal with Disney. According to Reuters, Disney was shocked at the news, but they shouldn't have been. It's a horrible idea. Just an app full of baby Grogus? Grogus? I don't fucking watch any more Star Wars. They ruined it. Grogus? Grogu. Grogu's, plural. Sorry. I've literally never seen a type before. Grogus. What's a baby Grogus? Baby Grogu's. Baby Grogu's, of course, flying into the Twin Towers. I hadn't reached the part where the baby Grogu's flew into the Twin Towers. Another Millennium Falcon has hit the Pentagon. But not all technology is bad, is it? This debate rages. In our next segment, hey, do you want this? Here's how it works. We're going to rule on the latest innovations being crammed down our throats. After each one, we'll decide. Do we want this?
It's too great.
Yeah.
Ready. Mm-hmm.
First up, Melania's humanoid robot. No. On what?
Thank you, First Lady Melania Trump, for inviting me to the White House. It is an honor to be at Fostering the Future Together's Global Coalition inaugural meeting.
Look at her face.
Yeah, this is the part of Westworld where they're like, wait, are you? Am I? Yeah. How long have we been here? So that's an AI-driven general-purpose robot that the First Lady endorsed as an important piece of educational technology for children that she called Plato. They were naming the robot Plato, I believe after the philosopher.
Sure. Yes, please. That was hilarious.
Yeah.
I like it.
You want it?
You know, I think this should be like serving smoothies at Erewhon, maybe. But I don't think educating the kids.
Yeah. What is it supposed to do? Like, to educate them?
I think it's like a teacher. I think it's just a literal, like, it's, you can ask it questions and it'll answer the questions.
Well, I hope it has a gun. You know what I mean? Like, I like if it's armed.
Well, this is where it's like, it's so funny that we decided that we want them to be people shaped. You know, that we decided, why not? This can't be like, maybe the best shape for a teacher isn't a person. Maybe the best shape for a teacher is something more, I don't know, pyramid-like. I don't know. You don't know.
Yeah.
Try out a bunch of shapes. See which kids come out smarter.
I think that's a great, great point. As long as it has a gun.
Yeah, it's gotta have a gun.
Yes.
A bunch of
guns. Well, this is where it's like at a certain point, like maybe it needs a gun or maybe it just throws its head at something. You know what I mean? Like it doesn't. We need, humans need guns because we're limited in certain ways, but that robot could, make throw us S like Superman does that time. Remember when Superman throws the S in Superman 2? And it's like, wait, he can throw the S? You know? And it's not an S. You know what I'm talking about? When he throws the S, you're like, he can throw cellophane S's? When was that power?
Yeah.
You know? Do you remember that?
No.
No, I'm sorry.
You know what?
But I'm so glad you do.
Yes.
I really do. I really do. From Superman 2, he throws the S.
Amazing.
I believe. At General Zod.
Does it cut his head off?
No, no. It's actually at the big silent ogre one, and it kind of wraps him up, and he's like, and then he falls down a hole.
I would love if it cut his head off, and everybody was like a little disturbed of like, that was a little bit much, Superman.
See, there's certain physical fight moves that are villain moves for no reason.
Yeah.
So Oddjob can throw a hat and cut somebody's head off because it's somehow seen as villainous, but good guys are allowed to shoot people, including people that are just in the way of the plot. Who are not responsible for what's happening to the hero. Like, there'll be heroes in a movie that are wrongly imprisoned, killing the guards at the prison while they escape. And it's like, that guard's just at work. He doesn't know anything about why you were convicted.
Yeah.
There's a moment in John, when I was watching the first John Wick, where he murders so many people. I mean, it's literally like two in the chest, one in the head, like 5,000 times. Then there's a moment like at the very end, like or you know, like lowest moment. He goes back to his house and his house has been burned to a crisp and he like finds the locket from his wife or whatever. And it's this like reconnection where like, remember? That's why he's doing it, because he's so sad. And I was like, oh, this would be so fucking rad if they flash to everyone's widow. Who, like, all the people he had killed, like, looking at their thing, being like, oh, man, Eric, like, he fucking died. Like
wow.
He's left so many things.
Mind-blowing, right?
Yeah. Every henchman has a story. That's what you were saying backstage, Dylan.
Yes.
Every henchman has a story.
Yes. Every founding father's story gets to get told. Every other henchman's story doesn't get told.
That's what he was saying.
Yeah, that's Hamilton.
And that's Hamilton.
Yeah.
Speaking of founding fathers, Andy Cohen.
Yes.
This summer, Peacock launched their AI-powered Andy Cohen avatar, who will recap recent episodes and tease upcoming drama as he guides you through the digital Bravoverse. Dylan, do you want this?
So, he's the AI Andy Cohen that guides you through the Bravoverse.
Yeah, that's right. What? That's what I.
You know.
What don't you get?
Okay. Honestly, the only thing I can think in my head is like, oh my God, he's a top. Did you know he's a top? He's a top.
Is the AI on a top? Probably.
Probably too.
He's sort of a nothing.
Yeah.
Surprised he's a top?
No, I'm not. I'm actually not surprised he's a top because he, you know, runs his own network. But also, bottoms actually run the world. So I am maybe actually a little surprised.
Power bottom?
Yeah.
Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah.
But the AI have nothing. They're nothing. They have
AI
bodies.
Is nothing. Yeah.
They're neither top nor bottom. They just act as if if we want them to be a top, they will be a top because that's how they act in the way that we expect them to act.
Yeah.
As close as possible to fulfilling our expectations,
yes.
You know, in a sense.
Yes. Mm.
So I suppose that would probably mean that AI Andy is performatively a top,
yeah.
But is only digital.
Yes.
Right? And can't be fucked because it doesn't exist. It's just
exactly.
A digital thing. You
exactly.
Know, when you think about it.
Yeah.
You'd have to, like, figure out a different phone to fuck it.
Or, well, what's interesting is you could imagine putting AI Andy into the Play-Doh thing.
Yeah.
And that could happen instantly. That could happen mid-meeting. That could happen mid-class, you know? They accidentally, all of a sudden, there's, like, a philosopher talking to Lisa Rinna. Yeah. And then they're like, wait a second, if Play-Doh's here, where the fuck is Andy Cohen? And it's like, shut up, you kids. I don't know what he would say. Probably nothing that bad.
I thought you meant like, then you can fuck it too.
Oh, like, I didn't even think of that.
Yeah. After
you think people
the
are going to want to have sex with robots? I never thought of that.
It's definitely going to be a thing.
You think so? No.
For sure.
Yeah. No.
Yes.
Fucking humans.
What do you
fuck
mean
anything?
Have sex with dolls? What are you talking about?
Yeah.
No one's going to have sex with robots. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Mark my words. Listen. I don't like making predictions. No one is going to have sex with robots. You just remember when I said it. No one
okay.
is going to have
happen.
Sex with robots.
It's
not
it's gonna
gonna
happen.
A part of the future.
It's gonna
That's
happen.
Crazy.
It's going to happen
That's
tomorrow.
That's a crazy thing to
yeah.
say. You guys are being crazy. Sex with robots. No.
By the way, Andy Cohen's involved in our movie, too. to bring it back to Your Dead Body, April 24th.
How so?
I don't want to ruin it.
Okay. Yeah. He hosted the reunion. So next up, and we do want AI Andy. We didn't really resolve that. I think we do.
Oh, maybe not for me. Just, yeah.
Okay. The next up, the Throne One toilet. It basically has an app that records all the poops you take, lets you know about its consistency, frequency, hydration level. Throne One keeps it organized for you. It's only $399. And before you ask, yes, there is a camera that attaches to your toilet and films the bowl, sending the footage thrown via, it says the footage to the throne via bank grade security, because you're making such an important deposit.
Yeah. No. But I do have friends who like would, my friend Josh lived with us for a number of months when he first moved to New York and would constantly leave the door open to the toilet and then want us to like look at his poops occasionally.
So
this would, take out the middleman. No, he wasn't.
Jewish?
No, he was not Jewish.
Okay. Is that a weird thing to ask?
I don't know. I wouldn't have gone there.
Yes, right? Yes.
Well, just, I find that Jews among Jews were just like, all right, is it just us? And then we talk about Mossad stuff, but then we come, stop it. And then, but then we do talk about our poops. Jews talk about their poops amongst each other.
I don't think of Jewish people as showing each other their poops.
Well, that's because maybe, okay.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm going to be very honest. I love this and I would love to have this because I have had things wrong for like years. And I didn't realize it until they were like, you've had Giardia for 2 years.
I thought that was a dog disease.
Bitch, I thought you got it from a river. But apparently, you can get it from eating ass. PSA. So.
That's from why you want this.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. All right.
Yeah,
just. Well, you know, capitalism found its market.
God, I'm learning so much.
Let's do one more. Let's stay on topic. The University of Maryland's Human Flatus Atlas produced what they're calling a Fitbit for farts, a tiny hydrogen sensor that provides continuous data about your flatulence from your underwear to an app. Boy.
Wow.
You know, Dylan, this has been a great CES for you.
Yeah.
Great consumer electronics show for Dylan.
Yeah.
I have something fart related. It's not this, but when we were recording our album Turtleneck and Chain, we got obsessed with, there's a product called Flat D. And Flat D, I think he was trying to like, It basically removes the smell of farts. So it's like a little carbon, I don't know what it is, but like, and you usually put it in your underwear, but we just had it out. And then anytime anybody had to fart, we would throw them the Flat D, put it on our, and we actually put a thank you in our album liner notes to the inventor of Flat D.
It's like noise. It's like noise canceling headphones for the fart.
Yes. Well, yeah. And we would get pissed at each other. If you're like, why the fuck didn't you put it on your butt? And you're like, it's right there. Yeah,
that's absolutely. Accountability.
So it seems like a good product. I think.
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't know about this one.
I think this is great, and I wear a CPAP machine. I have sleep apnea, and sometimes it's so intense. I wake up. It's like I'm a whoopee cushion, and sometimes the intensity is like too high, that it's so much air that it's too overwhelming. And I have to tell my, I don't know, this is like a nice measure of like if the intensity of my CPAP is too strong.
I feel like there was a character in the book Catch 22 where there's a tube in and a tube out.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for playing the game.
Did we win?
You both won. We'll be right back.
Hey, don't go anywhere. There's more of Love It or Leave It coming up.
Love It or Leave It is brought to you by Bombas. Spring is finally here, and as we head into our new outdoor adventures, our top priority hasn't changed, maximum comfort. From morning jogs to weekend errands, Bombas is here to upgrade your everyday go-tos with a spring in your step. The all-new Bombas sports socks are engineered with sport-specific comfort for running, golf, hiking, skiing, snowboarding, and, of course, all sport, which is actually the opposite of sport-specific, but I get what they mean. It's for all the other sports, you know, that aren't hiking, which isn't a sport. I mean, it's a great activity.
It's fun, yeah.
It's not a sport.
No.
They're cushioned where I need it most, the bottoms of my feet. Sweat wicking and loaded with other tech features to help keep you comfy and locked in. Bombas also has you covered with the comfiest footwear imaginable. I have the slides, which I wear every day. They're made with super comfy and lightweight EVA. The Friday slides, they're called. The new squishy Saturday suede slip-ons are also really comfortable. And for every item you purchase, an essential clothing item is donated to someone facing housing insecurity. One purchased, one donated, with over 150 million donations and counting. Head over to bombas.com/loveit and use code loveit for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/loveit. Code loveit at checkout.
In moments like these, it's easy to feel overwhelmed and even easier to feel powerless. But we are neither. I'm Stacey Abrams, and on my podcast, Assembly Required, I take on each executive action, legislative battle, and breaking news moment by asking three questions. What's really happening? What can we do about it? And how do we keep going together? This is a space for clarity, strategy, and hope rooted in action, not denial. New episodes of Assembly Required drop Tuesdays. Tune in wherever you get your podcasts and on YouTube.
And we're back! Woo! It's the end of the show, which means I started wondering, did I do good? Let's find out in our favorite segment, Second Thoughts. All right, here we go. First up, let's see, I kind of taunted Jesus during the monologue. Do you really want to risk it? I think Jesus would understand, as I understand Jesus, would understand where the heart of the joke was and would care only about the ethic of the joke. And the ethic of the joke is defensible. I don't think Jesus is sensitive or ego-driven.
No, he's like a forgiveness guy.
Yeah. It's a big thing about that.
God, on the other hand, I don't know.
Yeah,
you gotta be more careful. Super careful. That's the boss. Let's see. Do I regret my accent work? French accent plus Elvis impression. Momo. I think I got there. Momo. I'm getting there. Momo.
That's strong. Momo.
Yes. I just didn't go that down. Momo. Ooh. Hoo-hoo. I don't have it. I don't need to have it. I don't regret it.
That's your French accent?
That was. No, that was.
You combined the two a little.
That was Elvis plus French.
A little like, ho, ho.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah,
it's good.
It's pretty. It's fine. It's fine. Someone said, this one, one of the producers said, if you want to talk about trains all the time, maybe run for mayor. Okay. it says here, I could have told Yorma that he's handsome as well. You know,
I was thinking.
Thanks.
That as well.
I hope Peter put that in there.
So. What's interesting about that is it would have never occurred to me to say, because you had told Pete, you brought up, you said, call me handsome, and I appreciate that. What a nice compliment. It would never occur to me to immediately say the same back to you. And this way, you know, if I ever say you are handsome, I'm not doing it out of some obligation. It'll be because I had a
It would be weird.
My compliments are genuine, you know? So I don't regret not saying that you're handsome. Like, I think like you're an objectively handsome man, which I now feel obligated to do, and I don't want to be saying any of this. But I wouldn't have. I don't respond. I don't think it's. I think it's stupid as a culture that we do compliment. That's stupid.
Yeah, I agree.
Because if I'm, you know, let's earn a compliment. You know, have it come naturally.
Yeah. If
do someone, my fucking hair or something, yeah. Make it better.
Yeah, work on yourself.
If someone compliments me, I can't not compliment them back. It's the most uncomfortable feeling in the world. I'll make something up.
It's very American, right? That's more.
Yeah, it is.
One regret. I didn't really acknowledge the coolest moment of Yorma's life with Paul Rubens. I just kind of turned it into a joke immediately. That's sort of the show. do you have any regrets about tonight?
Anytime we talk about Pee-wee, I always feel like I'm like, fuck, I should have done the Pee-wee impression because everybody likes impressions, right? So I should do a little bit, right? Yeah. Fuck, I don't know what to say, though.
This has been a really, really good show. You're doing a great job, Todd. Really, I really think that.
Anyway. There you go.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Wow.
There you
go. That's so much better than my Elvis, which I'm now realizing is nothing. Ah, oh, no. I regret it. Dylan, do you have any regrets about the show?
You know, bouncing off of Yorma, I actually regret not adding in a Lin-Manuel Miranda impression to the "every other henchman gets to grow old, yes!"
That's that was really good. That's really good.
Finally, apparently, according to my producers, people are already having sex with robots, which I think is a lie. Not true. That's ridiculous. And that's our show. Thank you so much to Yorma Taconi and Dylan
Adler. Thank you for having us.
We will see you next week at Dynasty Typewriter. 219 days until the midterms. Have a great night and have a great weekend.
If you're already scrolling endlessly, which we know you are, don't forget to follow us at Crooked Media on Instagram, TikTok, and all the other ones for original content, community events, and more. You can also find Love It or Leave It on YouTube for videos of your favorite segments and other YouTube-exclusive content. And if you want to type our praises or rip us a new one, consider dropping us a review. Finally, you can join Crooked's Friends of the Pod subscription community for ad-free Love It or Leave It and Pod Save America episodes, subscriber-exclusive pods, and more. Sign up at crooked.com/friends. Love It or Leave It is a Crooked Media production. It's written in produced by me, John Lovett. Kendra James is our executive producer. Bill McGrath is our producer. Hallie Kiefer is our head writer. Sarah Lazarus is our senior staff writer. And Jocelyn Kaufman, Peter Miller, Alan Pierre, and Suba Argwal are our writers. Jordan Cantor is our editor. Charlotte Landis provide audio support. Stephen Colon is our audio engineer. Our theme song is written and performed by Sure Sure. Thanks to our designer, Sammy Caderna Reeves, for creating and running all of our visuals, which you can't see because this is a podcast. And to our digital producers, David Tolles, Claudia Shang, Mia Kelman, Delon Villanueva, Jay Banks, Milo Kim, and Rachel Gajewski for filming and editing video each week. So that you can. Love It or Leave It is produced by Lee Eisenberg, and our head of production is Matt DeGroat. And our production staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East. It's Love It or Leave It. Love It or Leave It. It's Love It or Leave It.
In moments like these, it's easy to feel overwhelmed and even easier to feel powerless. But we are neither. I'm Stacey Abrams, and on my podcast, Assembly Required, I take on each executive action, legislative battle, and breaking news moment by asking three questions. What's really happening? What can we do about it? And how do we keep going together? This is a space for clarity, strategy, and hope rooted in action. Not denial. New episodes of Assembly Required drop Tuesdays. Tune in wherever you get your podcasts and on YouTube.